The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
All right, welcome back in to another episode of Punt and the Poor Man. That's right, Drew Butler and Ryan Skates back once again. Ryan, I'm glad we're here. It's been a little bit of a while, a little hiatus. We did our proof of concept. Now we've got another rollout of episodes to come right here on Punt and the Poor Man. How are you doing, my man?
Oh, doing great. Just trying to survive the heat. We're going to hit 102 today. Down here in South Georgia, and outside my window, I can see my air conditioning condensation unit. I
mean, yeah,
it's awful. It's about to come through my ceiling.
So you can afford air conditioning. That's good to know.
Well, right now, yeah.
Yes.
The bill, you don't have to pay until 30 days after you've run the. For today, I'm okay.
Absolutely. We'll appreciate everybody tuning back in. Obviously, if you're here, you probably were able to listen to our first three episodes of Punt and the Poor Man. We had awesome guests like Lauren Smith, Jeff Dantzler, Coach Chris Hack. And to be 100% transparent, we took that proof of concept and we've been trying to find some advertisers to bankroll this thing because we have some awesome guests ready to roll out leading up to football season and into football season. And Ryan, I'm pleased to say we have officially found the first presenting sponsor of Punt and the Poor Man. And the sponsor is actually in my frame of view right now. If you're watching this on YouTube, the presenting sponsor of Punt and the Poor Man is Holderness and Born. That's right. Holderness and Born, offering premium apparel and accessories inspired by the game of golf. They blend classic style with modern fit and performance. Check them out, holdernessandborn.com. They are a partner of the Poor Man's Game Notes. That's probably how you know of them. The official apparel provider of the Banner Year merch line, available and offered right now at thepmgn.com. Check out the PMGN bookstore, commemorating the back-to-back national championships by the Georgia Bulldogs. You've probably seen some very prominent Georgia figures wearing their H&B Banner Year gear in celebration. Holderness and Born has shirts, pullovers, outerwear, bottoms, accessories, gifts. They have it all. Classic style, tailored fit. Holderness and Born, holdernessandborn.com. We got a sponsor, Ryan. We have awesome guests coming up. We have a special guest today. We'll get to that in just a second. But I'm wearing my Holderness and Board Banner Year gear right now. Check you out.
You're wearing the Banner gear. I'm just wearing, you know, the typical Country Club issue shirt. But, yeah, they make the best stuff, no doubt. And we're excited to have them. They've done a great job with that Banner Year.
They have, man.
Popular band. Seeing some people around town wearing those shirts is so cool. I've been on walks, you know. I go on walks every morning. And there'll be people on the beach wearing the hats, or you'll see people playing golf down here wearing the shirts, and you see some luminaries wearing them.
Yes, yes. Visits,
and, it's a fun thing. And anyway, so big thanks to Holderness. We're on board. They were early.
To yes.
The pod, and we hope to honor their excitement with some good product here.
Now I'm going to put you on the spot, okay? Hawking merch is a tough game. I've tried it. I've done it with Punt and Pass. You see me rocking my Punt and Pass rope hat right now, puntandpass.com. Go check it out. Your Banner Year lineup was a smashing success. Tell the people just how good it went or how good it's currently going. There's new items up for sale right now.
Yeah, there's some cool new items, actually. Some very exclusive items. We're early to market with some cool new stuff that Holderness has coming out for the fall. So, like I said, it's 100 degrees down here, and I've been getting emails, you know, every time an order comes through. And
we yeah. sold
a lot of hooded sweatshirts for a day that it's supposed to be over 100 degrees.
It's a great piece.
Yeah, Seth McWhorter designed it. And, you know, it's a cool way just for people who love this state and
Yeah.
love certain football teams just to commemorate some good memories. So it's been fun. It's a neat thing.
No doubt. Well, it's been a couple months since we did our last episode with Coach Chris Hack, which was an awesome episode. He bragged about Sepp Straka, who has since won on the PGA Tour. Sepp, it's day one of the British Open right now, the Open Championship for the golf nerds that will get mad at me for saying the British Open. Sepp chipped in on 18, so that's been one of the highlights of the day. What have you been up to? I'm glad you're back. I know you've been trying to get this thing going, but we're officially back, and I'm going to announce the guest here in just a second. But how's the fam? Football season's right around the corner. SEC Media Days were this past week. We're getting closer and closer.
Yeah, no, everything's good down here. I hope it is with you guys. We got two little ones, and we're way down here in South Georgia, so we've got to already be planning out our trips to Athens. You know, when you
Yep.
land in Atlanta, you can just decide on Saturday morning and if you want to go to the game. And down here, it's like going up the Oregon Trail, like going up 441 or Highway 15 for what seems like 12 hours to get to Athens. So we've got our, we've got our family trip to Athens planned.
Yeah.
We've got our father-son game planned. Then we have our parents' weekend planned. And
Wow.
our parents' weekend will be Ole Miss. There's a whole bunch of folks going up, seems like there's a lot of overlap between Georgia and Ole Miss fans. And that's going to be a great weekend. So yeah, we're getting excited. What about you guys? How's your summer been?
Man, it's been great. Bridget is starting kindergarten here in a couple of weeks. Olivia is now 7 months old. Kara right in the middle. She's three. We've been wearing out the pool, hanging out, enjoying our summer. We went down to Amelia Island with our whole family for 4th of July week, which was a lot of fun. And now, as you get into late July, I'm so ready for football, man. There's just no doubt about it. Georgia has had a tumultuous offseason off the field. Some through no fault of their own, others through fault of their own. But I think everybody's ready for football to get here. Yesterday, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution announced a lot of revisions to their complete hack journalism and hatchet job of an article accusing Georgia of rallying around sexual assault allegations, which was like the most crazy thing I've ever read in my entire life. I do have to give a big hat tip to General Counsel Michael Raber, Georgia Athletic Association's General Counsel, who penned a 9-page, 4,800-word masterclass completely discrediting Alan Judd, who's since been terminated, and quite frankly, completely discrediting the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. What should have happened. Now, I think everybody's focused on football.
Yeah, as a lawyer and journalist or somebody
yeah.
who writes things, man, that was wild to watch and fascinating and incredibly disappointing, because the AJC, that's the most important media outlet in the South, I'd argue. And for them to do what they did was just massively disappointing. I canceled my subscription. And, I think our viewers and listeners, you don't have to worry about journalistic malpractice on this fine podcast.
Yeah.
We go straight to the source. We bring you
exactly
news from the source's mouth. And, it's good to have the moral high ground on the fish wrappers from Atlanta.
Let me just say one thing. If people are tuning in to Punt and the Poor Man for journalistic integrity, you've come to the wrong place. All right. We're going to entertain you. We're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to talk to some interesting figures. We are going to do things the right way. There's no doubt. Speaking of the right way, you brought us an unbelievable guest today, and I'm fired up to talk to this guy. I've known him since I was in college, and then I went up against him in the National Football League. Georgia more recently went up against him in a very important college football playoff game, and now he is back in the NFL. You want to give a little bit of background on our guest? I know you guys have a little bit more of a personal relationship than I do with him, but this dude is a complete stud, a rising star in the game of football, and he may or may not be the youngest coordinator in the NFL. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, if he's not, he's close, and if he's not today, he might have been previously. But today's guest went to Centennial High School from Roswell, Georgia, never played a snap of collegiate football or professional football. But man, he was hell at the intramural fields playing for the Sigma Phi Epsilon flag football team. Guy could chuck a football 80 yards. He was one of the highest ranking members of our esteemed fraternity to not achieve the title of brother mentor. If you're a SIGAP, you
know, I don't know what that means. What does that mean for our listeners?
It's shameful. And anybody, any SIGAP listening nationwide will understand the shame associated with that. But he
brother mentor?
He's been able to succeed despite those shortcomings. Now today's guest is of course yacht rock superstar Michael McDonald. The Doobie Brothers. Let's bring him in.
Yeah, he's not in yet. We're waiting for him to jump in, and then we'll fire him up. But yes, Michael McDonald, the current defensive coordinator of the Baltimore Ravens in the NFL. He was a graduate assistant at the University of Georgia on the football team under Coach Mark Richt when I was in school. So that's how I got to know Michael. Played against him when I was with the Arizona Cardinals. He was an assistant with the Ravens then. They blocked a punt in the fourth quarter. I thought I was going to get cut after the game. I did not get cut because we won the game. Thankfully, he was linebackers coach back then. And then he had a short stint at Michigan. He was the defensive coordinator in 2021 for Jim Harbaugh and the Michigan Wolverines, notably making it to the Orange Bowl, winning the Big Ten, and then losing to Georgia in said Orange Bowl as Georgia went on to win the national championship. But we have a lot to talk to him about. I have a lot of questions for Mike. I have a lot of questions about how you were as a fraternity brother in SIGAP in Athens. We all know who you are now. And here he is. So let's bring him on in. Michael McDonald is our guest today on Punt and the Poor Man.
Oh,
Michael, here he is.
Video working?
Yes.
That's his good side, actually.
Just yes.
Mike, that's probably the more attractive. There he is.
There he is. Mike, how are you, man? Welcome into Punt and the Poor Man. Appreciate you joining Ryan and I on this very esteemed podcast. We just gave you a glowing introduction. Really appreciate your time today.
Hopefully everybody doesn't believe everything you guys said, but it's good to see you guys, man. I haven't seen you in a while, Drew, but, and Ryan, long time no see, buddy.
I know. We just had Mike and his wife and a guy, George Hilo, who was the linebackers coach at Michigan while Mike was DC there. They were down at the house this past week. We got to play some golf, go out to dinner. And, you know, this is Mike's whole story, I feel like, is kind of a series of long shots. Like I said, he wasn't good enough to play football. Georgia, but he ended up being a coach in the NFL. But the biggest long shot was meeting his wonderful wife, Stephanie, a three-time NFL cheerleading veteran. She cheered for the Titans,
wow,
Redskins, and the Ravens. She is more welcome than Mike in any NFL stadium. And getting to hear her stories and know her was awesome. So, yeah, we just got to spend some great time with them.
Said she's the Brett Favre of NFL cheerleading. She cheered like 8 years and retired like three or four times.
Hey, that's a great problem to have. There's no doubt. Mike, we've had a couple of very interesting guests who are Georgia adjacent or of Georgia legend. You, of course, having gone to UGA and then being a grad assistant and then a defensive assistant on the football team, that's where I got to know you. But before we get into the football stuff, Ryan was mentioning your days in SIGAP, how you were or were not a brother mentor. I don't know what that means. But
didn't get to the highest degree, you know. Okay. Rejection, man. You know, yeah. Sometimes you got to deal with it. Not bitter at all.
Never be a Freemason.
What was Ryan Skates like in the fraternity house? I think a lot of people want to know that. We get a little bit of his personality when we read the weekly Poor Man's Game notes. I think this could go one or two ways.
Yeah, he's the 40-year-old dad that, you know, had already been through everything with loafers and only cared about alumni.
Still the same way.
We needed a new bathroom in that house bad. And my one hope was to get some rich alumni.
That was great. That was good times, man. We hadn't talked about the old fraternity days in a while, so it's good catching up.
Yeah,
no question.
So I'll trash my fraternity all day, but we were freshmen or sophomores. It must have been freshman year. You know, they made us do community service. You know, I think I was trying to help single moms learn how to play golf, like a club pro guy. But Mike went and coached linebackers at Cedar Shoals. And that was how he got started in coaching. I just always think that was the coolest thing, is 18-year-old kid out there helping other 18-year-old kids just because he wanted to help him out of the goodness of his heart. And now he's defensive coordinator for the Ravens and contemporary of Todd Monken. And, you know, we see him on TV. And everybody says, I knew him when. So and eternally proud to know Mike and all he's done. It's cool to have you on the show.
Yeah, it's awesome to be here. Appreciate that, bud.
That's incredible. So your first foray into coaching football was doing community service at Cedar Shoals High School. Is that correct?
Well, Ryan makes it seem like it was out of the goodness of my heart. It turns out that I wished I was as good of a guy. But the guy that – Xavier Smith was my high school coach my senior year. He ended up getting the job at Cedar Shoals in Athens from Roswell. And when I learned of that, I had this itch that I just couldn't scratch enough and felt like it was – You know, divine intervention, call it what you want. But we had reached out to him, and it was serendipitous that way that we ended up working for him my junior and senior year at when I was an undergrad. Yeah. So that's how I got my start.
So undergrad years, 2008, 2009, you were the linebackers coach and running backs coach at Cedar Shoals in Athens. And then you become a graduate assistant at Georgia in 2010. What was that process like? I mean, are they actively looking for GAs? You get into grad school and you say, I want to get in there. What's that deal?
Do you even know, Drew, on how this whole process works, man?
No, I don't. I have no idea. This is Coach Grantham years, correct?
Yeah, well, so it was Willie Martinez was the defensive coordinator at the time when I was an undergrad.
Okay.
And I knew I wanted to get into college coaching, and I didn't know how. So Earl Leonard had helped me out getting a couple connections. But basically, I just went over to Buttsmere once a week for like 2 years and just tried to meet with Coach T and anybody that would talk to me.
Yep.
I didn't know what I was doing. Coach T was a big help. And it was just, I was just trying to stay, consistent with showing my face, and eventually maybe something would pop. Long story short, right before I graduated, I saw Todd Grantham at a Starbucks before an 8 a.m. class. Don't ask me what I was doing up that early. And I had sent up a binder previously, and this whole coaching thing, which is a bunch of, whatever. It was a bunch of crap, but I put a lot of work into it. And he said, well, come on by. And I said, well, hey, you can volunteer for a year if you want. And you just got to get into grad school. So the people at the grad school were pissed off because I was, late applying and I wasn't abiding by all the rules, but weaseled my way into grad school and volunteered for a year and then got hired as a graduate assistant after all the GAs left that first year. And those are the days where the support staff wasn't a, small militia, So it was just a few of us, and we had a great time, man. It was a grind, but it was fun.
All right, Ryan, I want to get your next question, but that was 2010 when you become a grad assistant. I mean, in your wildest dreams, could you have said 10, 13 years ago to Mike McDonald, hey, in 13 years, you're going to be the defensive coordinator of the Baltimore Ravens?
No, man, I had no idea what I was doing. I was just trying to survive Todd Grantham on a daily basis, bro. But if you could navigate the day without getting destroyed.
That was a good day.
No doubt. I mean, Todd Hartley and I still joke. I mean, we're breaking the copy machine daily. Absolute nightmare. He had this thing called a hit chart, which is all the formations. You guys might have heard of something, but it's just all the formations printed out with all the plays, and there's glue stick involved and cutting paper. It was like arts and crafts time, super late Sunday nights that, we're not going to get those days back, unfortunately, but we laugh about it now.
You guys had some great success, though, in those years. So after, undergrad, I was in law school at Georgia while Mike was coaching at Georgia. And so we were able to continue to we were both in grad school. We took a grad school class together. Looking back, we had you, who ended up becoming defensive coordinator for the Ravens and also for Michigan, and Michigan's most epic year, in modern history since 97. And then you also had Josh Brooks, who's now the athletic director.
Yep.
We had a stacked class. Christian Robinson was in there. Anyway, we all
Josh would get in there after doing projects, and I'd be thinking like, this is a pretty good idea. Just try it. Turns out it worked.
Yeah, absolutely.
So then after Georgia, you were defensive quality control assistant 11 to 13. Then you get a chance to head to the NFL. Was that an opportunity you couldn't pass up? Again, were you actively looking kind of take the next step in your coaching career? Because obviously that's a big step.
Yeah, it was wild. I mean, I think there's a pretty good record of my lack of recruiting expertise out there. And I think that started to show itself when I was at Georgia. It was all awkward when we had visits on campus and stuff. So I'm like, I don't know if this it's like maybe the pro game is the way to go. And so I kind of had my heart set on going that direction. And Rodney Garner actually you know, recommended me to a Ravens scout in 2013. And I had gone up for an interview for a personnel position with those folks. So I got to meet a bunch of people in the building in Baltimore. And, you know, I said the non-lucky word of like, hey, I think I still want to be a coach to the folks on the personnel side. So that got me, you know, crossed off the list pretty quickly. But luckily, I was still kind of in the hopper for the next year. So in 2014, John started this intern idea to bring in some young coaches. And luckily, I was part of that kind of experiment. That was the first time he did it. And I was fortunate enough to get hired there. And then that's when it all got started.
What sets interns apart in the mind of a John Harbaugh head coach, great head coach, Super Bowl winning head coach for the Baltimore Ravens? Is it new ideas? Is it simply showing up every day with a good attitude? Is it getting along with the players and coaches? Like, what would you tell a young intern to set themselves apart in a college or an NFL front office?
That's a great question. You know, when we got there, there was four of us. They didn't quite have an idea of exactly what the job description was. So it's kind of like create your own job description. So it's just take on stuff, man. Mm-hmm. You know, you're in the NFL, you're in an NFL building working for probably the best organization in ball. And like, I'm living right down the street. So I didn't leave, you know, I just stayed there all day.
Food's free.
Yeah, they feed you. I mean, like, there's no reason to leave the building. Shoot.
They do your laundry for you.
They do your laundry. You can't beat
it. Yeah, it's awesome.
So, you know, and you have access to all tape for the last 10 years. Like, you kidding me? So, you know, and John was awesome. He gives you a lot of projects over time that empowers you and stretches you and, you know, develops you over time. So, I mean, shoot, it was an awesome experience, man. Just doing stuff that I had no business doing at that age, but you just jump in head first and you kind of too young and too dumb to know, like, hey, what if I fail at this? You don't really think about that. You're just trying to learn and do whatever you can to help the coaches and try to win some games.
I remember in 2015, my wife and I, we went to DC and Mike took the train down from Baltimore, and it was about this time of year. And we were talking about life and trying to make money and stuff. And he's like, man, you know, if I can get through this week, I've got $200 in my bank account. If I can get through this week from now until February, I do not have to spend.
Yeah,
that's great.
Every meal, all my clothes, everything is taken care of. So, you know, I'm just really trying to get to next week. Of course, now he brushes his teeth with gold coins. I remember
That's great. That's great. Ryan took his private jet up to DC, which is.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, he left that part out.
It's a long drive from the private air. You got to go, you know, through Langley and all kinds. It's really not.
There's a lot of security up there, apparently.
Yeah.
All right. So 6 years in the NFL heading up to 2020 through 2020. Life's pretty good. Like you said, the NFL lifestyle is pretty sweet in season, especially for a coach. Then you get an awesome opportunity to become the guy, defensive coordinator at one of, if not the most prestigious program in college football history for John Harbaugh's brother, Jim Harbaugh, at the University of Michigan. Did you have to think twice about that? Did you jump across the table when they offered it to you? Did it take any convincing with your wife? What was that process like?
Yeah, man, I wish I could say that I knew it was such a great opportunity and jumped at it, but I didn't know. I mean, like you said, you're just in it. And when the opportunity came up, when John and I talked and eventually had the conversation with Jim, I've never been to the Midwest before. I've never even stepped foot in the state of Michigan. College football was just kind of not on my radar. So once I was able to actually physically getting out of the building, going home, talking over with Steph, and then it became blatantly obvious. It was like, okay, this is pretty awesome. I got to pinch myself here. And then when you actually get on campus and meet the players and the coaches and you realize how big Michigan is internationally, you know, it really probably is the biggest brand out there. I mean, you realize the Block M just is a powerful deal. And there's a lot of naivety right now and all these stories that I'm telling you, but maybe that's the secret, that you just don't realize, you know, how much kind of pressure is on you at the time, and you're just focused on doing a great job. But yeah, that was wild, bro. It was wild because it was during the season. You know, we were making a run in 2020 I think that was the COVID season, and Jim was great. You know, like, I think we agreed that, you know, we're going to work together and started trying to put in a staff together, but we're still on a playoff run. So he said, hey, you know, you can finish it out with Baltimore and hopefully you guys win the Super Bowl and get here in February. But unfortunately we ended up losing in Buffalo that year. But yeah, that was a while. It happened fast too. Like, you know, realized that they had an opening, and then maybe a couple of days later, John mentioned something to me, and by the end of the week, I was hired. It was crazy.
Would you be recognized when you were living in Ann Arbor and you went to, you know, wherever Yankees, from that your version of Chick-fil-A, you're standing in line. Did people know who you
were? I mean, if I'm decked out with like a Michigan gear, maybe like a picture above my head or something from the TV screen, maybe by the end, only when we were winning, you know, when we were losing, if we lost Michigan State, you know, we lost, kind of tried to hide on that one. But
tell us about that Ohio State game. It, and we've talked about it just because, it was so epic to see on television in the snow in Michigan Stadium. And I mean, it was such a watershed victory for Michigan, and you obviously were key. Now, you were the story coming out of that. The defense was the story. Just tell us what it was like to live through that as a college football fan and a guy who's played and competed at every part of or every level in football.
The atmosphere was absolutely electric, man. I, like, you guys saw it on TV, and the guys doing the game, you know, Gus Johnson and Joel Klatt, they were, you know, I've since gone back and listened to it and stuff, but like, they did a great job of like painting that picture, you know. But at one point I looked up and it's like snow. I mean, you don't really realize during the game, I'm looking up, it's snowing, we're winning. I think there's a minute left about, and I was like, man, this is off the chain, bro. This is pretty special. You know, so it's fortunate to realize in the moment of how cool it was and really take it in. And then, you know, to be able to celebrate with the guys and your family and friends after, and everybody rushing the field, was just a once in a lifetime deal. You know, after that, like, I give the rest of the staff, we got a big framed like landscape, you know, those big frame like, landscape pictures. I got those for the staff after. I thought that was pretty cool.
That's awesome.
We could all share that forever, but it took me like an hour to get back into the locker room, but you know, I had to go around the stadium. I couldn't even go up through the tunnel. It was so crazy.
I mean, that's a monumental victory. First time in years, the first time Jim Harbaugh had beaten Ohio State. And then you guys are going to the Big Ten Championship. You end up winning the Big Ten Championship, yeah. And then taking on Georgia, your alma mater, in the Orange Bowl. I mean, conflicted at all? Is there any point even during – okay, good answer.
Still
is
upset there any, about it.
Is there any point even during that run where you're sitting in your office kind of pinching yourself like, holy shit, I'm the defensive coordinator of Michigan – we're the number two ranked team in the country. We're going up against Georgia for a chance to play for a national championship.
No,
you're just so locked in.
You're just like, it's kind of wild. Like, and Drew, you know, this from being in buildings and stuff, but like, you're just in it and doing what you do every day. And the great thing about Michigan and what we had there were, the coaching staff and the players were so tight. And Jim did an awesome job of just setting the tone for that team and letting the players. I mean, we had some elite leaders like Josh Ross, Aiden Hutchinson, Brad.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Ballew here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit JimEllis.com or stop by any of their 20 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
Hawkins. I mean, you just go down the list on defense. I mean, on offense, we had some great guys too, but the guys that we're with every day just had such a great mixture of dudes that really were hungry, you know, to go out a champion, and they paid the price, man. They did it every day. So when you have players like that and you have a kind of agreement and such a great relationship that you want to get this done, like that's, I mean, I know it sounds cliche, but really that's what you're thinking about. You're thinking about the guys that you're working with and you're coaching and trying to make sure you're putting them in a position where they can be successful. And then when you do, you know, all of a sudden you look down and shoot, you're in Miami and you're playing Georgia. Like that's when the crazy stuff happens. But yeah, by no means during the process are you thinking like, hey, we're going to go, you know, this is what's happening. You just take it day by day. Looking back, obviously it was a great opportunity for us to make a run. And, you know, I'm still all the losses, they stick with you. You know that, Drew, like you just, what could I have done different? Things that you're trying to learn from moving forward. Took a lot of lessons from that, you know, even coming to Baltimore, and you're just always trying to grow and trying to learn from mistakes that you make. Even times when you win, you're still learning from that, but it's a lot easier to learn from stuff when you fall short.
Ryan, I want to get to your next question, but you just brought something up. The losses stick with you. I don't know if you've seen it or have had time to see it, but the Netflix documentary Quarterback following Cousins, Mahomes, and Mariota, it's fantastic. And Patrick Mahomes says, he's like, dude, I've been to 5 or 6 AFC championships and I've already won 2 Super Bowls, but all I think about are the losses. I mean, it's crazy hearing him say that, a guy who's accomplished so much.
Have you seen it, Ryan?
No, I haven't. No.
It's awesome.
Yep, there's another podcast out there called The Play Callers. Have you guys heard about that?
No, I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, you should listen to it. It's really, they did a great job with it. But Andrew, they're talking about the Shanahan, McVay, LaFleur, McDaniel kind of coaching tree and the evolution of that, which brought us, you know, brings us today. But they have a lot of guys talking about it. I think it was Andrew Whitworth on there.
Yeah.
And he says the same thing, you know, like talking about the losses, man. I mean, they talk about all the success that those coaches have had the last, you know, 10 years, but 5-6 years really is what they're focusing on. But they're thinking about the losses, man. And those are the ones that really drive, you know, evolution over time, because it really shows you, you know, where your blind spots are.
Think about this, Mike. I played in the Senior Bowl in 2012. The Redskins were our coaching staff for the South team. So Mike Shanahan was the head coach. Kyle Shanahan was the offensive coordinator. LaFleur was the quarterback's coach. Sean McVay was the tight end's coach. Bobby Slowick was on the defensive staff. Jim Haslett, Raheem Morris. Like, that was a murderer's row of a coaching staff. Looking back now, you're like, oh my God, I guess they just didn't like me. That's why I'm not in the league anymore. They're all over the place.
They're head coach everywhere. So
Yeah,
that's crazy. It is funny. And they talk about that on the podcast about, you know, the room that they're all in and all the times they'd be fighting about ideas and things like that. It's interesting.
So tell us about, and I want to hear Drew's take on this too. I know that you prefer NFL ball to college ball, and for a lot of reasons. And I've told you that I think NFL.
Are we on record for that, Ryan?
we can cut that out.
But yeah, Liam, if we need to cut that, just let us know. Liam can cut it.
Yeah, if you're up for a head coaching job in the SEC, of course, that's not true. Walk us through. You know, I think of the pinnacle of college or football in America being something like that Ohio State-Michigan game where it's snowing and you beat this old-time rival and it's fantastic. And I have a harder time grasping, like, what the equivalent of that is in the pro game, you know.
Yeah,
I want to hear from both of you guys. Walk me through that. I have the hardest time staying awake on Sunday afternoons watching you guys.
I was killing Ryan, Mike. Dude.
I mean, yeah, Steelers Ravens, dude, like top of the food chain NFL rivalry right there, man. No doubt.
He's right. Ryan, Drew just happens to be on the wrong side of it, but.
I mean, look, I know Coach Tomlin and Coach Harbaugh have such respect for each other, but man, they go at it, dude. And I know those weeks, like Monday, when you clock in and it's Ravens week and you're a Steeler, it's like, dude, we're going to war. And that the fan base jumps into it. You know it's going to be a battle. I mean, hell, my rookie year, like James Harrison was still on the team. And dude, James Harrison, Ray Lewis, like all time. Mike, yeah, you could definitely talk more about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's the difference in college is you only play once a year. And the stakes are, I mean, the stakes, the whether or not you win the game or not, first of all, it's bragging rights, right? Because there's not another game where you can kind of settle the score. But also, you know, just losses, one loss will kill you in college football. So there is a little bit of a difference there, I guess. But Drew's right. I mean, our rivalry, and really in our division, which the awesome part about our division is there's natural rivalries with every team, you know? Mm-hmm. The Ravens Steelers, I agree. I think that's the best in NFL football. But I mean, us and the Bengals, we're right there. I know the Steelers and the Bengals have a heck of a history. And then, you know, the Browns and the Ravens, I mean, shoot, it's from day one. You know, there's a lot of history between just the two cities of Cleveland and Baltimore. So it means a lot to us. Now, like when you get into like, we're playing the NFC West, which you play once every 4 years, like, you know, that's a little different. You don't feel the history there, but definitely within the division, I think it's alive and well.
If we could get Ryan off the island and out into the mix a little bit, like there is no, like Ohio might be a bad example because they do have Ohio State football, but like Baltimore, I mean, it's the Ravens when it comes to football. And Pittsburgh, they love the Steelers to the point where like that's an SEC type atmosphere in Pittsburgh. So geographically speaking, that AFC North, that's one of the toughest, if not the toughest division to play in football. I think also the pressure from a livelihood standpoint in the NFL. And what I mean by that is there's nothing better or more fun than winning NFL football. The coaches are happy. The locker room's happy. Ownership's happy. Dude, you have two losses in a row. I mean, everybody's walking on eggshells. Like, who's getting cut? Bottom of that roster starts getting churned. Coaches are like, what the hell is going on? Would you agree with that, Mike?
Yeah.
Fortunately, from your cushy defensive coordinator office. Meanwhile, I'm the punter walking around like, oh shit, here it comes.
Well, you know, we did have a couple of tough endings last year, and it's just like, man, this is like the lows are low, bro. I mean, so you have to be like trusting in your principles and the things you're doing and the people around you. But once, and you'll see it throughout the league, like, you know, if people aren't on solid ground throughout the year, it's very hard to maintain that cohesion that is so necessary to win. You know, so the teams are able to kind of navigate those rough waters when you do lose two in a row, because it's at some point it's inevitable. You know, the league's so competitive that, but yeah, man, I mean, like, you know, we've been in games where, you know, guys will get cut or coaches get fired in the middle of the season. You're right. It's the most competitive league. Now, I can't think of one that's more competitive, just because it's every week comes down to the last minute. Just another thing, Ryan. Everything in college football, 9 times out of 10, will not come down to the last minute or two. Like, and when it does, it's like epic, right? Like Ohio State, Georgia. I mean, that was an all-time game, right? Just back and forth, back and forth. But, you know, that's every week in the NFL. That's every game.
Every game. Coach Tomlin, Monday mornings, he put 5 plays up on the projector. 5 plays that determine the outcome of the game. Like, because it's coming down to the last minute. There's no doubt. He'd be like, this punt right here, you know, this penalty on third down, which extended, like, that's what he's doing. He's like, those 5 plays just cost us that game. And you're like, damn, that sucks. But that's what happens, Mike.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I want to ask you about Coach Richt. You got your coaching start with Coach Richt on that staff. What kind of principles you talk about, you know, really standing by your principles throughout an entire season, or work ethic, or, you know, relationships? What did you learn from a guy like CMR, who's getting inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame this December, which should be awesome, that you've continued to carry on through your coaching career?
Yeah, I saw that. I'm obviously really, really happy for him. But, and I mean, what a tremendous human being. I mean, just talk about a guy that walks the walk in everything that he says and does. And it made you proud to be on his staff. Like, you were like, Coach Richt is my coach, you know, like, kind of walk a little taller when you meet people that, like, Coach Richt is our coach. You are proud to be a Georgia Bulldog at that time. And it just showed you that like you can be a principle based leader in that world, you know, cause it's so cutthroat, so competitive. There's so many things behind the scenes that a lot of teams, you know, you think that take advantage of and can take shortcuts and do all these different things, but that was not Mark Richt. That he is one of a kind. And I just, had a lot of respect for him, working with him on a day-to-day basis. Same guy every day, and no matter what was going on, and just an easy man to want to run through a wall for. And I think the players, Drew, you probably agree. The players probably felt the same way, right?
Yeah, I think you said it. The number one thing that I always tell people about Coach Richt is that he was the same guy every day, whether it was game day, post-game press conference, Monday, Wednesday. Like, that was the biggest thing that I learned being around him, is he wasn't fake. He didn't have to put it on for the cameras. He didn't have to cuss and scream. Like, it was Coach Richt all day, every day. And now being, you know, 34 with three kids and working, it's like, dude, I respect that so much. It really is true.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, I'm proud that I was able to work for him, for sure.
All right, this question. Take Drew out of this, and of course, take me out of it too. I know it's going to be hard. But who are the most talented people you've spent time around? You know, going from Georgia all the way, all the way to the Ravens, people who just stuck out to you, like, this guy is on a different level. Like, I can't imagine. I don't know if you were there when Ray Lewis was there at the Ravens, but working in the same building as Ray Lewis.
I mean, that would have been awesome. I unfortunately was not there. He retired. Okay. He retired after they won the Super Bowl, and then I came 2 years later.
Okay, sorry.
I mean, I know this. It's like, I can't narrow. I mean, I could go through the great players that we played with, but what these guys are able to do, and Drew, you can co-sign on this. They're like, it's incredible, bro. They're like superhuman. I mean, it's just, and my butt goes out there, and like, I'm trying to demonstrate a drill, and I look like the biggest idiot of all time. And I'm like, how am I supposed to explain this? And they make it look seamless. And when you watch the game, I guess when you watch NFL football, it's like, it's so fast, but it's so clean. Is that even in practice? Like, there's no falling down. Everything just looks like a well-orchestrated, like, dance almost, because it's just, everyone is just so good. And that's what makes it so competitive. I mean, I Eric Weddle pops off the top of my head, how he was able to process the game and being an elite athlete at the same time, thinking about like a Terrell Suggs, just a rugged Raven, you know, just from the get-go, absolute bully. People don't realize this about Sizz, is he is a elite high level thinker in the game. Talk about like, and all these guys that are so talented, Ryan, it all comes to, with the preparation and the mental aspect too. But one of the smartest players I've ever been around are you know, Terrell Suggs and Eric Weddle. I think those two guys that just pop off the top of my head.
I think a guy that you deserve a lot of credit for, alongside Coach Grantham, a guy that really didn't have an identity until Coach Grantham came in, Justin Houston, who was turned into a freaking All-American, absolute game wrecker, NFL draft pick, signed a monster contract. You know, I think it took some vision of how he could produce in that Georgia defense, kind of putting him on that outside like nine technique, linebacker, if you want to call it. And dude, he just absolutely shot up the draft boards and had a great career.
Yeah. One thing I learned a lot from Todd was like, if he had a great player, he could make, like we did it with Jarvis, we did it with Leonard Floyd. He would make the game plan around him so he could wreck the game.
Yeah.
Those are his words. And I think what they were doing with like DeMarcus Ware when he was in Dallas, that illustrated a lot of how we wanted to use Justin. So they were playing in the same position. And I worked with Todd with the outside backers in 2010. I was joking when we signed Justin last year. I was like, you remember me? I was this guy just getting my freaking ass kicked every day by you on the bag. But yeah, I was your student assistant in 2010. But he did a great job with Justin. Think about Justin is like, he is a maniacal worker. So, and studier of the game and understands pass rush. And it's like all he thinks about, to his credit. And he understands that really at a different level, and taught us a lot last year, our year together. I remember being at the Pro Bowl with him 1 year, and he was just clinicking us on pass rush. He sees it a little differently than most people. So it was awesome to be around him and to hear how he thinks about it and the moves and how he sets it up and all those things. But he is, talk about one of the most talented people you're around. He's definitely up there.
On the flip side, when you're breaking down tape, even in college, now in the NFL, like who's a guy on the offensive side of the ball where you're like, oh shit, we got to make sure that we're on our stuff because this guy could expose us any second.
Well, first guy is Lamar Jackson. Luckily, we don't have to play him.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Always at practice, you know, you just get to stay away from the quarterback, you know. So, hey, you know, we're just staying away from Lamar on this play. Don't worry about it. In reality, he's going to juke you, make you, you know, look foolish and throw it down the field. Shoot, bro. I mean, there's so – I think the athleticism at the quarterback play right now is
– especially in the AFC.
Especially in the AFC. And, like, NFC, too, I'm thinking of Jalen Hurts and guys like that. But guys that can extend plays – and even if you defend the play perfectly on paper, they still make you pay. Those are the ones that are just, you know, so difficult to defend. We didn't play Mahomes last year, but I mean, he's you know, the best in the world at it right now. Josh Allen, you know, obviously in our division,
Burrow,
Deshaun Watson, Kenny Pickett does it. You know, Kenny Pickett, he does it as well. So it's all throughout the league, man. So like, you have to make sure that when you're game planning, you're accounting for that, and that's hard to do. And I think, you know, the league's catching up, trying to catch up to those quarterbacks right now. But, you know, we're trying to get that figured out.
Ryan, you got to watch quarterback, man. You're going to have such a new appreciation for Patrick Mahomes. This dude is he's the best quarterback in the game. And the way he takes over the game with his athleticism, like Mike's saying, his preparation, you're going to be like, man, this is insane what this guy does. It's awesome.
It's funny, every coordinator goes up to him after the game. Like, hey, you're an absolute nightmare. You know, yeah.
It's so true. So true.
I'd walk up to him and be like, who are you?
That's great. All right.
Listen out, Ryan. NFL football, baby.
All right. Let's switch gears a little bit. I can only imagine a man of your stature, the golf opportunities that have opened to you since getting these high-profile jobs. Tell some of the best golf experiences you've had. I know you get to go to caves a good bit. Tell us what's your golf game like now? What are some cool places you've played recently?
I got this great friend. He lives down in Sea Island, and he invited us to go play.
Good answer.
He invited us to play Seaside a few weeks ago. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, the putt-putt course was booked, so we went. Yeah, that was better for us. But this guy had never seen Seaside before, which is the hardest course down here, arguably. And on the front, he shoots a smooth 34.
No okay. Problem.
I think he had two bogeys, too. And
wow.
Bogey and two birdies, yeah.
Yeah, anyway, so.
Where did I shoot on the back?
Yeah, like 48 or something.
Have you played Burning Tree?
No.
Haven't played Burning Tree yet? Got to play Caves.
Yeah, Ryan has these images in my head that I just fly around and play these incredible courses. But there's some great golf up here in Baltimore. A lot of it's private. I just joined a place called Woodholm here in town. That's an awesome course. Trey Bennett, he's a former Dog. He works up here for the Ravens too. He's taking me to BCC, which is a great BCC East up here.
Tillinghast course. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They got their own tees there. That's a great course. Caves was awesome. I played that once. I mean, that's just like an experience. You know, it was wild. We played Sage Valley last year with a couple other coaches. That was elite. That was like, holy smokes, this is big time. But that's about it. My dad and I have gone overseas to Scotland a couple of times. You guys have gone overseas to play?
I haven't. I've been overseas, but I haven't played over there. I got a group of buddies who are going over to Ireland for 10 days next week, so they're fired up.
Oh, that's elite. You got to do it. I mean, and we're just going to have, like, I haven't done the whole golf trip with the buddies yet, but maybe we can make that happen. That'd be awesome.
Okay.
Yeah, let's do it. Next off season. We got it. Just so Kyle, I'm talking to Drew now. Kyle and I are coming up to Baltimore for a game. We don't know which one yet, but Stephanie told us that we get to sit in their cool seats.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, inviting, I'm going to have a guest of a guest now, Mike. So I'm going to invite Drew and his wife and their 12 children up. We got to figure out what game we're going to, Drew, and maybe we.
Oh, that'd be awesome, man!
While Mike's grinding, and then we'll tell them about the cool place we played when they go out and beat the Bengals on Thursday night or something.
Yeah, that would be ideal. All right, so it's July 20th. Training camp starts next week. What's this next week look like for Mike McDonald? You got the honey-do list ready to go. I mean, you're about to be locked in until hopefully mid-February.
Well, so I'm locked in. So we have, there's a week before the vets report where the rookies are in. So they're in right now. So we have like an hour long call out of practice, workout meetings with the guys. So we're getting those guys up to speed. Quarterbacks reported today. So we'll have them out there tomorrow. So we're in it, baby. You know, the trip down to see Ryan and Kyle, that was kind of the last hurrah of the summer, but you know, putting the finishing touches on the training camp plan and making sure everything's tight and organized and ready to go. I mean, we have a great plan that we're starting out with, but you can't be married to that throughout. You know, you just have to be flexible throughout the process and wherever the team is and things you need to improve on and work on. And, you know, the players and what they can do will kind of drive how we evolve throughout camp. And hopefully, you know, at the end of it, we're ready to go. And we feel like, you know, we have enough defense where they're really good at and can start the year the right way.
All right. This might be a little inside football question because most people may or may not know this, but it's been like 3 or 4 or 5 years since the Ravens have lost a preseason game. Tell me during that all call to get into training camp, does Coach Harbaugh have a slide that says like, we don't lose preseason games? What's the mantra around that?
Well, we're trying to win every game. That's okay, basically there you go. It just happens to be a preseason game. I think something that we do a great job here is we develop our young players. They get a lot of reps, and I can't speak for any other organization. I haven't worked for any other team, but something I feel like we do is we give our guys a great chance to make a name for themselves and give them an opportunity to go show what they can do. And you build up all those reps after a 4 to 5 week period. And I think they're ready to play late in those games, you know, and
yeah,
it's fun to see those guys have an opportunity to go out and show what they can do. And when they're making plays and stuff and they're fired up, that's a cool feeling. But yeah, I don't remember the last one we lost, but it's been a while.
If you had to place Ryan Skates into some capacity in an NFL building, I mean, from cafeteria chef to pro personnel, where are you fitting Ryan Skates into an NFL franchise?
Outside of offensive coordinator, Ryan, is that?
Yeah, just so you could dominate, Mike. Make you look really good. I know that much.
I'm going to be the high dollar season ticket sales rep. I'm going to be
okay, I like that.
That's Trey Bennett.
Boxes, yeah, to guys, and you take them to play golf.
Wining and dining.
Yeah, that's no doubt.
That's Trey Bennett. Piece of cake. We can make that happen.
Perfect.
He sent me a picture, Ryan. He's down in Seattle a couple weeks ago, too.
Now, did he marry – this is – it's like he married Haley Sherbach, right? Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, okay, awesome. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
All right, Haley Sherbach, Trey Bennett, multiple shouts out here on the punt and the poor man. Well, Mike, dude, it's been so awesome reconnecting with you. We appreciate your time here on Punt and the Poor Man. We're getting this thing back rolling again. We did 3 episodes earlier this spring. The next 3 episodes made possible by our great partners over at Holderness and Bourne. Ryan's got to send you some of this fresh gear so you can be rocking it on the road during some of your road trips. But I think you just gained a lot of Baltimore Ravens fans here. So we really, really appreciate you jumping on. I know you're super busy with training camp starting. Ryan, thanks so much for getting Mike in the fold, man. This has been a blast.
Yeah, we'll send you the bill.
Absolutely.
These are no joke.
I appreciate it, guys. That was awesome, man. And good luck with everything. Congrats on your success so far. I listened to the first couple episodes to make sure I didn't do anything stupid. So
you did great. You did great. You passed with flying colors.
Yeah, we'll get you some notes, but just 2 or 3 things. Can you do better media?
Only one thing to edit, you know, in case somebody comes calling.
Yeah, that's right.
There you go. Well, thanks so much, Mike. Thanks so much, Mike. Best of luck this season. We'll keep tabs on you. All right, man.
All right. Thanks, Drew.
Ryan, so awesome to have an NFL coordinator on Punt and the Poor Man in episode 4. I don't know many podcasts that can say that, but huge shout out to Georgia grad Mike McDonald, current defensive coordinator of the Baltimore Ravens, for jumping on. I mean, 2 things really jumped out at me. 1, he is extremely smart. And 2, I had fun with him. He's a fun guy to talk to. That was cool.
Yeah, no, I mean, he did so well at Georgia. He was, you know, highest honors, whatever that summa cum laude. I didn't know. That's not on my degree. He was in Leonard Leadership Scholars. He could have gone and done anything he wanted to with his Terry degree and, you know, really took a big risk by taking a volunteer job.
I know.
Pretty wild. He could have, he had every door open to him in the business world, and instead applied it to football, and it paid off in a big way for him. And it's just it's cool to see.
But I did.
We're going to the moon. Who's next?
Dude, I know. Who is next? We got to think about this. I got a couple on my hit list for sure. Again, huge shout out to Holgerness and Bourne, our presenting sponsor of Punt and the Poor Man. That's the whole reason why we're back in the fold, and I'm sure they'll be happy to associate themselves with an NFL defensive coordinator. Holgerness and Bourne offers premium apparel and accessories inspired by the game of golf, classic styles with modern fit and performance. HolgernessandBourne.com. And of course, head on over to the PMGN bookstore, thepmgn.com, official apparel provider of the Banner Year merch line. I've seen a lot of people rocking the Banner Year merch line, a lot of dignitaries, a lot of luminaries, a lot of very important people. I'm rocking mine right now. I don't fall into any of those categories, but it's got classic style, tailored fit. Holgerness and Bourne, simply the best. Huge shout out for sponsoring Punt and the Poor Man. Do you have a wish list of who you'd want next on Punt and the Poor Man?
I do, and they're on my phone. We got the text messages going.
Sweet.
To keep the pipeline fresh and a lot of cool people coming in. I mean, the between the podcast that you've built and Poor Man's Game Note, just people who love the dogs, we have a lot of great people, I think, to bring on. So I'm excited about what's in the future here.
No question. Yeah, it is going to be a great fall. And we're going to keep this going officially. If you're interested in sponsoring Punt and the Poor Man to keep this thing going, reach out to us. You know where to find us. It's very, very easy. Again, huge thanks to Mike McDonald, Michael McDonald, not of Doobie Brothers fame, but the defensive coordinator of the Baltimore Ravens in the NFL, for jumping on with us. Ryan, anything on the way out, my man?
You know, while we're talking about Michael McDonald, I've got to tell you the story about, Yacht Rock legend Michael McDonald.
Okay. You have one for me?
I'm a big Steely Dan fan, and the song Peg, that was his appearance on the radio, was doing background vocals for the song Peg by Steely Dan, which is an all-time song about a guy who goes to see his ex-girlfriend in a nudie movie show in a seedy place in New York. And that's where it all got started. And I think our boy Mike McDonald is living up to his namesake.
Yes, he most certainly is. I'd love to know.
Just as epic.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, Ryan, we appreciate you, my man. We'll be back next week with another episode of Punt and the Poor Man. Check us out at Punt and Poor Man on Instagram. This will also be up on YouTube. He is at the PMGN on Twitter. I am at Drew Butler, Twitter and Instagram. Appreciate you tuning in. We will talk to you next week. See ya.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Blue here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit JimEllis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
Tonight in Arkansas, there's a mother tucking in her daughter and turning off the light. A business owner is burning the midnight oil. an at-home dinner date is plating up possibility, and it's all happening under one roof. How? The power of a conversation, like the one John from Integrity Solutions had with First Horizon Bank about his vision for a sustainable mixed-use building. Now it's not just words, it's life. First Horizon Bank, let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/John. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.